You're listening to coverage from the 2008 Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We're going to go ahead and get started. I've got a little thing to read here. Today's activity kickoff is a full day of producer education workshop. Wednesday afternoon will also mark the opening of the Cattle Industry's largest trade show. The NCB trade show has attracted more than 270 exhibitors this year. There's a reception that kicks it off tonight. You're all welcome to come. The National Cattle Foundation has done a 30th anniversary, 35th anniversary celebration. They're going to have a NCBA pack bowl auction and a cattlemen's auction contest. Ed Schaefer, the new Secretary of Agriculture, will be here on Friday morning. And tickets are still available for the NCBA bag meeting at dinner and stroll on Friday night and grand final evening event to dance on Saturday, February 9th. My name is Josh Cody. I'm from Iowa. And Joe Gill is from Nevada. We're going to put on a little discussion with you this morning about the state planning, financial planning. And first of all, I want to thank Pfizer, which has sponsored this event. I think they've done it for quite a number of years, and certainly we couldn't bring this to you without that. In addition, Joe and I also represent the Cattle Fund, Cattlemen's Legal Fund. See, Roger Super is in the back. He's the guy that started all of it. He did a great job of setting it up. I'll put a little plug in for that. Talking about the state plan, financial plan. And that's an issue that probably cattlemen have and agriculture and ranching probably haven't put as much emphasis on as they should. The bottom line here is you spend a lifetime building a state, a lifetime building a business. You need to spend a goodly amount of time. Joe and I will think you probably tell you whatever it takes to plan what's going to happen to it, what you want to do with it, where to go with it, and who you want to get it. First of all, Joe talked about this a little more, but I think we're going to have to assume that we're not going to have the friendly environment and government that we've had. Your association, particularly in Washington, and a lot of the state organizations, state legislators, has done a really good job of representing agriculture. In fact, the cattlemen have led the vote for agriculture. But I'm not sure how much longer we're going to have the kind of impact they've had in the last, say, 10 years. In addition to that, we've had leaders in Congress like Senator Box in Montana. Senator Grassley Lyle was a farmer, and we've had a tax-cutting president in charge. I can't tell you what's going to happen in the elections, but there's a pretty good chance that the people who are going to be making decisions in the future don't have the kind of understanding of agriculture business that the ones that we're talking about have had. And so I think there's going to be some real concern about what you're doing to your state, what your tax situation is going to be. And, you know, it's very important at this point there could be the estate tax repealed completely. It has been raised. I'll talk about the numbers in a little bit. But it's very unlikely that we'll have a complete repeal of the estate tax. For whole cases in 2010, I like a farm bill. If we don't get something done by Congress, it goes back to the old system before 2003. Right now, we have large estate tax exclusions, gift tax exclusions, and a very minimal capital gains rate. That's the problem in the state government. It's only 15% now. Probably in the future, it will be larger. Well, I just talked about it. I'm going to tell you, because of one, our cemetery, a couple of water cowboys, and doing the state plan, but we'll try to get you some idea about how to talk to your lawyer or your accountant. If one point were made, is that you or somebody in your family is going to have to be very active in the process. You need to spend some time, you're going to need to talk to your family, your friend, your banker, your lawyer, your accountant, and make sure that what you want to do with your estate, with your property, both during your life and afterwards, is what you really want. I've got a pretty extensive outline in there. Joe's got a pretty good checklist in my hand. I'm sure we'll cover some of it, try to get the high points. But we won't get into a tremendous amount of detail. We'll have to try to reflect on that a bit, too. Two things are going to happen in the very near future, which seem to be in conflict with each other. On the one hand, as the greatest generation, World War II guys, and then the baby boomers, as they get older, retire, and start to pass things on, we're going to have a huge transfer of property from that older generation to the younger. Most of you here probably are in those groups you're pretty close to. At the same time, and it will probably get worse here before it gets better, there will be a huge transfer of money and funds from the younger generation, the workers, to the older generation in terms of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. A huge part of our budget now, we call them the entitlements. President Bush's budget, which came out earlier this week, is a very large part of the federal budget. But the Social Security taxes right now don't really cover all of those items. They cover Social Security for sure. They better than cover Social Security. But probably the taxes, their taxes or contributions, whatever you want to call them, will probably get bigger rather than small. The other thing, Medicaid is a huge expense to them. But you've been watching some of the debates on television, and certain people are under office stamp all over themselves as to who's going to give you a bad health care plan. If you think your health insurance is high now, what do you pay for everybody else's? Somebody talks about this is going to cost $122 billion, and we cover it. And then she says, and if they don't try out with the furnished wages, well, if they're saying $122 billion, you better count a lot of your figures now. With all this money flowing around through the government and affected by the government, people like you, in agriculture, farmers, ranchers, small businessmen, have to be real careful that don't get caught the wrong way. So, this will take some time and effort. So a good estate plan, a good financial plan, as you know, it takes a lot of effort and anything worth doing is worth doing well. Plan should be as simple as possible. It should be flexible. Let me give you a hint. If you can't understand your estate plan, it's probably not for you. Okay? If you get your old smart. You've got to be able to understand it and explain to you in a couple sentences and be able to explain it to your kids. Keep that in mind. It should be tailored to the specific farm, ranch, or business. It should provide for the true intent of the owner. It should provide support for adequate retirement and living expenses for the older generation. And this is kind of a new phenomenon in society. People are retiring at 65, 62, what would be 90? That's one of the problems with Social Security. People retire and collect them all the time. It used to be people died after 65. That's part of the same with this. But now, many people start taking Social Security. One of the decisions you'll be making, and your parents will be making one of these times, is do you take Social Security at 62? And then 65 in 8 months or whatever it is for 7? Problem is, if you're in pretty good health and you're making some money, can add to that, stay productive. You might want to wait till you're 70. But those are basically mathematical computations. It depends a lot on how long you're going to live. Certainly, most people have been active in their life. They're probably going to live long enough. If they wait until they're 70, they're probably going to rot. You need to, the farm or ranch, make special accommodations for the stay-at-home kids, the guys that are on the farm, or something like that. Often people will go to their lawyer and say, we want to be fair. And he thinks, particularly not really familiar with the farm or ranch, they'll think, well, that means we've got four kids, we'll divide it four ways. But think about that. The one that stays home runs the ranch. The one that stays home and does the work helps mom and dad. You probably want to make some special considerations for them. Agriculture doesn't return 6 or 7% every year on its initial investment. And you can't talk about this without talking about the tremendous inflation in farmland, ranch land. You know, we're in Iowa, we hear about those trivial prices. Illinois, $10,000 an acre, talking about $5,000 in Iowa, and we can't even imagine what those ranches in Intermountain West are worth. But they may not be worth that much as a going economic unit. And if you want to have your family keep that going economic unit, you need to make some special provision. Joe and I were talking about this a little earlier. There's probably no business like farming ranch, but particularly the cattle business, where you see families keep a business together as well as this business right here. I always thought cattle people were special people, so I made the credit. But I don't know if it's the love of the land, the connection with the land, and the cattle, and the horses, or just the family. But this is a huge thing in America. There are all over this country people that have been active in the national cattle. You don't get to see this. There are families around the country, from Texas, Arizona, Hawaii, that built wonderful businesses and been able to keep that in the family. There's something unique about that as cattle things. So, the extent you can do that, that's good. On the other hand, if you're doing your estate planning, do everything you can do to keep, and sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's not important, but keep from having a will contest for litigation after you're dead. I hope I'm the only guy here that ever can fall off and defend a will contest. I got a couple years ago, a real lesson there. I was asked to defend a family who was a direct heir to an old gentleman that had put together a pretty good chunk of land in Clayton County. And he'd written a number of wills over the years. He lived well into his 80s. And one of the wills had given one of the farms to a nephew. There were a couple of wills after that. And there were some questions. You know, he'd been in a lot of hospital and things. And so they filed a will contest. I defended the family, defended the will. And I got to tell you, if somebody wants to contest the will, they'll find somebody that says you agree or subject to undue influence or you didn't know what you were doing. In this case, they got in front of a guy in Chicago who was had more PhDs than his name than I can say. They had testified in 800 cases, never seen him again. You know, reviewed the record studies, obviously, in common. We tried to educate the jury for 2 weeks and compare to 1 month. But, you know, they tore the family apart. I mean, those are tough. If you can avoid it, by all means do so. One thing. We talk about what was she like? I was trying to think about, you know, good example. Your lawyer again should be like your veterinarian. Most of you know how to give shots. You've got a health program. Most of those things with the cow you can take care of. But if he was having trouble with your meat insider, the first thing he finds is the tail, you know, that's why you're bad. And more importantly, you got a vet to call. You use your veterinary for when you really need it, and you use it to do an overall health program. That kind of activity by you, but that ability to call on a professional. And in some cases, you'll call on a specialist. If he's got a big problem, you can't handle it, just like a veteran. And you need to be very active, but you need somebody to talk to. And sometimes, you know, Joe and I don't need lawyers. Go to another lawyer to do their thing. They want an independent evaluation. They want somebody else to look at it and see what it looks like. So, if you don't learn anything from here today, or don't take anything away from today, you've got to play a role, but you've got to have professional help. So I'm going to turn this back to you. You've got a good checklist, and you can go through that and work on this, and then I'll be available here to take over when you come.
Thanks, Wes. Good morning, everybody. Good to see you here. I've got the bat post on my badge. It's welcome to Nevada. It's a real pleasure to have NCBA's convention here as it is on a relatively regular basis. I'm a native Nevadan. Fourth generation, so I guess I'm qualified and welcoming. I'm also a lawyer and a rancher, and haven't done much estate planning practice in recent years. I've evolved into some different areas in my legal practice. I'm still active in management of the pretty large ranch, so I see some of these things on a fairly regular basis. Wife alluded to this. My dad was a lawyer, and my grandfather was a lawyer. When my father was diagnosed with cancer about 15 years ago, he and I were both practicing law together in a relatively large firm here in Reno. And we were doing a fair amount of estate planning work in those days. Well, when we got over the shock of our diagnosis, we were having a cup of coffee early in the morning, and I said, you know, you need an estate plan. And he said, you're right, I did it. He had to get old and things like that. And we were, I would say, qualified to create an estate plan for him. But we went somewhere else. We went to another law firm here in town and sought what we thought was the best qualified and competent advice to create that plan. And the purpose of that story is to illustrate to you and emphasize something that Wright said. And that is, get the best qualified person or persons you can find to create an estate plan for you. Become very active in that process. And I guess beware of people who advertise that they can solve all of your problems with one tool, with a toolbox, or they have all the answers. Just be very cautious about how you approach this, but do take an active and very involved role in this. It's a very important thing. And just another tip off of something that I said, and I'll get into the
meet with this.
I've seen it in my whole life. I've seen it in my own family. And Mike's seen it in his practice and with his neighbors. You folks work your whole lives, and the people who came before you worked their whole lives. In some cases, several generations back, worked their whole lives to have this thing called your ranch. And it's getting more complicated, not less complicated, to figure out how to pass that on to the next generation. And what else are you doing? Make all that money so you can have a big vacation, a month-long vacation every year in Hawaii. That was a joke. No, of course you're not. You're doing this because you love what you're doing. You want to pass it on to the next generation. I assume that's why you're in this group. We can't give you all the answers. This is not... You can't walk out of here with your own customized estate plan, but we'll give you some language, some ideas, some thoughts, that checklist in the materials. It's as much as I can think about it that I would want. If I was your lawyer and you were coming to me, I'd want all of those things that are in that checklist. And I'd want you at least a little bit conversant in that language. That's located on that checklist to understand, so we can have a pretty intelligent conversation right away.